The American Broadcasting Company brings you Issues and Answers.
This is Howard K. Smith in Washington. Until the Republicans choose a presidential candidate, the de facto leading figure of the party, the Republican who packs the biggest political wallop, will continue to be Senator Everett McKinley Dirksen of Illinois, the Republican leader in the Senate. It was he who produced the amendments and the Republican support that broke a filibuster and passed the historic Civil Rights Bill 2 weeks ago. Now, this past week, he has announced that he will put Senator Goldwater's name in nomination for the presidency at the Republican convention. To some people, those two actions seem contradictory. Senator Dirksen reproached Senator Goldwater for opposing the Civil Rights Bill. Now he will pay Goldwater the supreme tribute of launching him towards the presidency. We'll ask Senator Dirksen about those two actions and other things in a moment.
Now for the answers to the issues. From Republican Senator Everett Dirksen of Illinois, Minority Leader of the Senate. To interview Senator Dirksen, ABC News commentator Howard K. Smith.
Well, Senator, question A1 is obviously that seeming contradiction. Senator Goldwater said the Civil Rights Bill was unconstitutional, you strongly and publicly dissented, and now you've agreed to nominate him to be the chief enforcer of a bill he says can't be enforced without police state apparatus. What's the explanation of that?
Well, Howard, there is no contradiction, as a matter of fact. It's a long time ago that the Senate Labor and Public Welfare Committee considered, for instance, a title on federal employment practices. And Barry Goldwater and John Tower of Texas asserted their minority of views in a minority report to that bill. Everybody knew about that. And so it was not strange to me that he should pick out 2 of 11 titles and decide that in his judgment, they were unconstitutional. Now, the fact of the matter is that that's a prerogative of any senator if he wants to do so. And I have no quarrel with it. When he made his final speech on this subject, he addressed himself to the bill, not to me. And he had a perfect right to do so. But I know this, that if it is signed into law, and it has been signed into law, he will enforce the law because he has a fidelity to the Constitution and to his oath of office. And so there's nothing strange about that at all.
Let me read you one adverse comment and ask for your comment on it. Walter Lippmann wrote the other day, "If the bill is what Senator Goldwater said, unconstitutional and a threat to our liberties, all who refuse to abide by it are, by his definition, heroes of a patriotic resistance." And then Lippmann said that his nomination would be a threat to internal peace.
Well, first, that's a personal opinion by one man. And even if that came from the Supreme Court, that would be the personal opinion of a few people. But that doesn't mean that it's constitutional or unconstitutional. You wait, of course, until these matters are presented to the Supreme Court if there is any tendency to test the constitutionality of this bill. And we will abide, of course, by the majority opinion of the Supreme Court.
Tell me, what do you anticipate in the enforcement of this bill? Do you think there will be tremendous difficulties? Some people have compared it to prohibition, which was unenforceable.
I have grave doubts about it. When the bill was signed, that, of course, meant that it was going to be enforced. And a variety of suggestions were made with respect to the enforcement of the bill. Now, that goes for Senator Goldwater as well as for anybody. When we had him in Chicago on Tuesday, he said very frankly, when the law is there, it is the prerogative and it is the duty of the chief executive to execute the law. If you have an attorney general who doesn't do a good job, you dismiss him and get another attorney general.
Did I understand you to say you have grave doubts about the enforceability of it?
No.
No, I see.
None whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, tell me, how long have you been in favor of Senator Goldwater for president?
Well, I suppose my inclinations have been in that direction for a long time. But in the hurly-burly and the acceleration of events, obviously there is a period of incubation, as I call it, when the mind begins to ripen and then finally hardens into conviction. And ultimately it did arrive at that state or that posture. And I had no difficulty then in reconciling myself to the candidacy of Barry Goldwater.
What can you say, what factors made your mind, your opinion harden in favor of Senator Goldwater?
Well, Howard, there has been a tendency, of course, to take a man's vote on this bill or that bill, or to pursue this policy or that policy. But I remember an old friend of mine in Decatur, Illinois, who once sent this suggestion to me. He said, your assessment of an individual is a man moving forward and Godward toward mankind. You don't just take a man apart and say, well, he did this or he did this, that, and you fragment him throughout his 13 years of experience in the United States Senate. So I take the whole man moving Godward, and that's good enough for me. And people forget that for years I served on the Labor Committee of the Senate Committee with Senator Goldwater. You get to know a man. You get to know what makes him think. You get to know what makes him tick. You get to know what makes him move forward. And I had a great fascination for his courage, for his conviction, and for all those great attributes that add up to making a great individual.
Now, Senator Scranton has now challenged him. Why are you not for Senator Scranton, Governor Scranton?
Well, let me ask you a question. Why should I be?
Why should you be? Because on most, I'm not suggesting you should be, but on most issues like the Test Ban Treaty and civil rights and so on, you've been closer to him than you have to Goldwater.
Well, that could very well be. But I go back, of course, to that original principle. You take the whole man and his attitude toward government, toward the functions of the federal government, and you have to assess him and you have to appraise him in that fashion.
Now, in this book that he wrote recently, Senator Javits said there were 25 major issues specifically favored in the Republican platform of 1960. You voted with the party 18 times on those issues, and he says that Senator Goldwater's voted against the party 25 times, all 25 times. Does that not make a difference?
No, it doesn't, for a very good reason. You have all these specific issues. There may be one item in an issue that somehow impels a person or repels a person from going along with the original act. I've seen that happen thousands of times. Lincoln once observed that the true rule when you embrace a proposition or assess it is to determine whether the good outweighs the evil. Now, I have one view about it. He has another view about it. And I respect that view, because it comes from conviction, of course.
Now, you've said the other day that you're not campaigning for the vice presidency, but almost nobody does. Suppose it were offered to you, would you be interested?
Oh, Howard, I must tell you how that ever happened. When we had this meeting in Chicago, it was my old-time friend, Governor Stassen of Minnesota, who said to the delegation, you have a great fellow here who should be your favorite son. He said, I go further. I think you would be a great candidate for the vice presidency. Well, I couldn't respond at that time. I had to wait till we heard all the candidates. And then when I had the last round with the delegation, I said, perish the thought. I'm not interested, and I will not be interested. And besides, when I think of the vice presidency, and a job of cutting ribbons to open bridges and highways, and to sing see kings and potentates abroad. I thought, mister, down on that chamber floor, you have one vote out of 100. And there are 100 people out of 190 million. And that vote is a pretty important thing. And you'd better think a long time before you give it up.
Senator Dirksen, if you're not interested in the vice presidency, what would you think of a Goldwater Miller ticket?
Well, I have no particular impression about it. There are many people who could be selected for that spot. I got my comeuppance and my lesson long ago. There was a time when I was really interested, and that was when Tom Dewey was running. And I thought, if nobody else was a real, honest-to-God, sincere candidate for the spot, I'd put up my lightning rod. But in that year, we had Earl Warren, we had Harold Stassen, we had a good many others. And I said to the national chairman at that time in Chicago, I throw in with whoever you suggest. Now, it's generally known, I think, that the presidential candidate has to have someone who has an affinity with which he can live. He's got to have an outlook with which he can live. And so, generally speaking, that's always reposed in the hands of the nominee. And nobody quarrels about it particularly. So I have moved myself right out of that list, right like now. And besides, I've often thought, as vice president, you can go around meeting kings and princes and potentates. You can snip ribbons to open bridges and highways, and you can dedicate dams in the West. But down on that Senate floor, I am one of 100 people in the United States out of 190 million who has a vote, and that's important.
Senator, let me ask you something about that civil rights bill. With a what's called a white backlash in existence, with the fact that you've never depended on a Negro vote, with a man like Governor Wallace from the South getting big votes in Democratic primaries, with the man you're going to support for president opposed to the civil rights bill, what prompted you to take the leading role you did and almost write the civil rights bill and then get the support without which it couldn't have passed?
Well, first of all, as I stated over and over again, in the language of Victor Hugo, this was an idea whose time had come. Now, I don't know how other people read their history, but I have to read it according to my lights, and that's the way I read it. But now, when it comes to Barry Goldwater for the presidential nomination, I can understand his conviction even as he understands mine. And I respect it, of course. With respect to those two titles in the Civil Rights Bill, where he took some exception, that's been on record for a long period of time. The Senate Committee on Labor and Welfare had reported a bill on fair employment practices. That was Title VII in the Civil Rights Bill. He and Senator Tower of Texas wrote a minority report. It was there for all to see. So there wasn't anything astonishing about that. But he has his views, and I respect his views. But this I know, his fidelity to the Constitution and to the laws of the country adds up to this attitude, and that is, if he were president of the United States, he would enforce the law. And as he said to me in Chicago, if I had an attorney general who wouldn't do it, I would fire him, and I would get one who would.
Let me ask you about your stand on civil rights. Early on, I think at the end of last year, you were very much opposed to the public accommodations clause. Now, what changed to make you in favor of it?
Howard, I was not entirely opposed. The problem that bothered me was this question of respect for the state laws and for the state commissions. In the case of accommodations, there you have criminal statutes in 34 states in addition to the District of Columbia. Now, how do you integrate this thing so that the states have the first crack at it? That was true of Title VII, on unemployment or employment opportunities. There we have 30 states. They bothered to set up commissions. Why shouldn't they have the first chance? In California, they dispose of these cases in a week. In my state, they dispose of them in 2 weeks. And I wanted to conserve that primary exclusive jurisdiction on the part of the states, and that's in the law today, as the president signed it.
Let me ask you a political question again. Recently, after a recent meeting of the Illinois delegation to the San Francisco convention, you came out and the press reported you were in a highly irritated mood. What were you angry about?
Howard, I wasn't angry. That was referenced to, I think, the first meeting we had with the delegation on June 15. The fact is that I had to catch a plane at 5 o'clock to get back here in time for some very important business on the Senate floor. I managed to get out of the place in time. We had weather. You can believe it or not, but when we got finally to where the plane was taking off, the two stand-ins were already in our seats. That was Congressman Ahrens and myself. I wasn't furious. I wasn't angry. I said, look, fellas, you just got to give a guy a fair break. We got to make that airport in time. I never get angry.
Now, there was some suggestion that you were upset that the delegation did not make Charles Percy, your gubernatorial, Republican gubernatorial candidate in Illinois, co-chairman of the delegation.
No, I wasn't upset about that at all. Largely because we'd had telephone interchanges, and he was quite agreeable that I become chairman of the delegation. So I'm afraid people were writing stories and venturing conjectures of one kind and another that just didn't stack up with the facts.
Tell me, are you bothered by the fact that leading senators, Republican senators like Javits, Kuchel, Keating, Hugh Scott, have indicated they could not support Goldwater if he ran for the president?
Oh, no, that doesn't bother me. Because people didn't support Wilkie. People didn't support Eisenhower. People didn't support Nixon. Those are the verities of our political existence.
Mm. Well, now let me ask you about your opposition. Goldwater, it's pretty clear, will have to run from behind and try to catch up. Now, what would you advise?
Wait a minute. You say Goldwater has to run from behind.
Yes, I'm judging by...
Are you referring now to the incumbent president? Or,
yes.
Or to a candidate on our ticket?
No, the incumbent president.
Oh.
Now, the incumbent president has all the advantages of an incumbent president, and polls suggest he has a very large lead at this moment. What would you suggest to Goldwater? I'm sure he'll ask your advice as to how he should catch up.
Howard, tell me, truly you're not the victim of polls, are you?
Well, these polls have been so pronounced that I would imagine there's some degree of possibility.
Yeah, but the computers and the polls have really taken a lacing in 1964 in every state of record. Let me tell you a little story. I tried to make a dent by some kind of a open advance on the normal issues in 1950 when I ran against Scott Lucas, who was then the majority leader of the Senate. Out of a clear sky, the last week in June, Truman sends the troops into Korea. People didn't want to hear anything else. That was it. And I said today in our press conference, or whenever it was, people make the issue. You don't make it. And that is true now. Who shall say what the major issue will be between now and November? So far as these polls are concerned, in my judgment, they're conjecture. Joe Alsop came out to Chicago, to Oak Park, in fact. I wanted to bet him money. He said, you lose by 300,000. I said, why? He said, on the basis of the polls I've seen. I won by 300,000. Now, what do you make of that?
Well, until I mentioned polls, you were about to agree with me that Goldwater will have to run from behind to catch up with the incumbent.
No, Howard, I don't.
I see.
Here is a whole man with a robustness and a vigor. And when he goes out to fight, believe me, he doesn't use sponges for weapons.
Would you have any advice to give him or suggestions?
I don't have to give him any advice. He's been in the political milieu in the federal level for the last 13 years. I do own to the fact that I'm his political godfather because I went out searching for a candidate in Arizona way back 13 years ago. I found him. Took some doing to get him into it, but I got him into it, and this is his second complete term in the Senate. I served with him on the Senate Labor Committee. I know what makes this fella tick. I know his courage. I know his conviction. I know how he lashes out. And if ever this country needed a fella like that, it needs him now.
Do you think foreign affairs or domestic affairs will be the major issue for him to work
on? Well, foreign affairs will be an issue. Vietnam will be an issue, notwithstanding what Ambassador Lodge said. I didn't make Korea the issue. The people made it. With 1,000 casualties, 240 of our boys, combat casualties for the most part. You think I have to make that issue? The people will make it.
Now, how about home affairs? We have a president presiding over a virtual boom that's been going on for quite a while. Isn't that hard to beat?
No, it isn't. Normally, of course, it's regarded as an obstacle. But just think of all the problems within the domain of that boom. The debt limit, the expenditure, the various policy questions that arise, the fact that agricultural parity is probably the lowest in about 30 years. We'll have issues galore to think about.
Senator Dirksen, what is your assessment of the first 200 days, which has just passed, of Lyndon Johnson's presidency?
Well, Howard, let me be very candid. I think the president has worked at his job. But beyond that, there are issues that are to be disposed and have not been disposed. We just raised the debt ceiling to $324 billion. Here is this question of the budget. Here is this question of a phony farm bill reaching into wheat and cotton, which made me very, very unhappy. And so we can multiply issues galore, and those issues will be made, believe me, in the 1964 campaign.
What do you think about his sense of authority? Do you feel it's been strong or not in the presidency?
I have no doubt about it because I think he inherited that feeling when he was a majority leader of the Senate. I think I get a sense of it as a minority leader. But the fact of the matter is, he is on top of the heap as president of the United States. And he must therefore accept responsibility for everything that he signs. And it is on that basis that the attack will be made.
Well, that sounds like the first campaign speech for the election of 1964. Thank you very much indeed, Senator Dirksen, for coming here and being with us on Issues and Answers.
Howard, thank you.
Our guest has been Senator Everett Dirksen, Republican of Illinois, Minority Leader of the Senate. Senator Dirksen was interviewed by ABC News commentator Howard K. Smith. Next week at the same time, Issues and Answers will bring you Representative William Miller, Chairman of the Republican National Committee. Issues and Answers is produced by Peggy Whedon. A presentation of ABC News.